Well, everyone, we know you've been hearing about it. The two Koreas, North and South. And at least on the surface, it sounds like they're making some moves towards coming together. But I tell you what, I kind of like the idea of letting us hear from the expert on this. Dr. Albert, they're meeting. I understand that Kim Jong-un stepped across the 2018 mark, the curb, and shook hands. And then the South Korean president did the same. He stepped over onto the north side, and they did their symbolic thing. What should we be thinking about this summit?
First of all, that was unscripted. So President Kim was supposed to come over to South Korea, and President Moon called him over to South Korea, and he came over and stepped over the demarcation line, which is, it looks just like a curb if you've seen it. And then Kim, like, you know, told President Moon to hold on a second, and then said, come on over to North Korea for a second, which has never happened. And President Moon was, you know, this was off script. They didn't talk about this. But sometimes in diplomacy, you do that to make the other side happy. And so he did for literally like 4 seconds. Mm. He stepped over into North Korean territory. First time that's ever happened. And then they stepped back into South Korea to have the negotiations take place. And so far, we've had some significant progress that we should take with cautious optimism. North Korean leaders, the Kim dynasty, since 1953, has signed treaties, protocols, agreements in the international arena with the United States, with the six parties involved in the recent negotiations, and every time failed to live up to their side of the bargain. So this is a pattern for, you know, 65 years that they sign an accord of some sort and then break it or pull out immediately afterwards or, you know, within a couple of years. Mm-hmm. Well, but what they have done differently this time is, first of all, you have President Trump in office. The leader of North Korea, President Kim, doesn't know, can't predict Trump's actions. So I think Kim is actually afraid of what President Trump might do, which if you get that afraid, it's time to come to the bargaining table. So I know a lot of people don't like doing this, but I like to give President Trump a little bit of credit here for creating a situation in which he's saying, look, you don't want to play around. We're not playing around, mm-hmm. either. So it's either, you know, option B, which is going to be bad for everybody, or come to the table and let's get rid of this. And President Trump from the beginning says he wants complete total denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. And as of this morning, the two Koreas agreed to an initial framework of denuclearization, complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, which would be just a huge success for President Moon of South Korea. And for President Trump, if he had something to do with it behind the scenes, I think his rhetoric at least has something to do with it.
But I agree.
President Trump said he would not meet with President Kim. And that's what Kim wants, is a meeting with the United States. That's what Korea has always wanted. North Korea has always wanted, is to be legitimized by meeting our head of state, our head of government. And so he's at least saying, OK, we will have a denuclearized Korean Peninsula if that's what it takes to get the president to meet with me. Now,
they're scheduled. Well, no date has been set, but they've agreed to meet at some point in the future.
Yeah, they're going to meet. They have five possible locations picked out and a couple different dates picked out. We're most likely probably beginning of June. And they have some territories near North Korea where President Trump will travel to meet with President Kim. President Kim doesn't have the technology to fly or travel far. He has very old Soviet era planes. So he can't travel that far out. So maybe to Japan he can get to, South Korea, maybe China, maybe somewhere in Russia, actually. But he needs to stay in that region because their technology just doesn't match, you know, anything close to a global power. But breaking news, and I like to thank my students if they're out there listening. They just texted this information to me while I was driving up that the two Koreas just agreed to sign a peace treaty.
Yes.
So this is just breaking. So shout out to my students out there. A peace treaty between everybody involved. This is complicated. So so many of our listeners might be like, what are you talking about? Like, so the Korean War, you know, 1950 to 1953 ended in what's called an armistice.
Yes.
So we did not have a peace treaty. So technically, the United States, South Korea, is still at war with North Korea and technically China. This is still a war, and that's why the demilitarized zone, which is, you know, kind of ironic name, is the most militarized zone on the planet right now. There is more munition in that area than anywhere else in the world. Wow. So that's pretty astonishing.
That is.
But why is that the case? It's because we are still technically at war. The United States is still at war with North Korea. South Korea actually isn't even a signed party to the armistice of 1953. So they didn't even sign that because North Korea wouldn't recognize them as a legitimate regime, so wouldn't let them sign it. So they're literally still in an active state of war against North Korea, although, of course, we've had a peace armistice since 1953. So this is groundbreaking because for this peace treaty to happen, North Korea would have to recognize South Korea's legitimacy, that they're a sovereign country distinguished from North Korea. China has to be on board to sign a peace treaty. The United Nations has to be on board to sign a peace treaty because the armistice was signed under United Nations auspices. And the United States would have to be a party to this peace treaty because we're all the ones technically still at war. The Korean War was formed. It was a strategic concept by the United Nations. So it was a war fought under their authority and control, with the United States, of course, doing most of the heavy lifting in that case. But so all those parties would have to be in agreement to this. So this is, I mean, just a phenomenal, you know, newsflash happening that at least North and South Korea have agreed to sign a peace treaty. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. China will have to get on board and what President Trump is going to do and what he requires for peace treaty. But you could look at, you know, something that's been bothering the United States and international security for 60 years could be solved within the next year or so, which is just amazing for peace and stability.
And something, Dr. Albert, that really impressed me, I think it was when Rex Tillerson was still in play. He recommended strongly that we talk with North Korea. President Trump said no. One of the things that has that I've been curious about for some time, I know it has been quite a while, including when President George W. Bush was in office, when President Obama was in office, the North Korean president was saying, I want to sit down and talk with the United States. And our presidents kept saying, no, no, no. Beyond any symbolic meaning, would it be in any way hurtful for the United States to talk with North Korea?
The idea that the United States' grand strategy concerning North Korea is that you don't want to have bilateral talks, that's country-to-country talks between the heads of states, because then we would legitimize their existence. You know, we don't want to recognize North Korea. We want to recognize South Korea as the government of a unified Korea. So if we have high-level talks with North Korea, that's giving them legitimacy. That's saying we recognize, we normalize you into the community of nation states on the world stage. So that sets a bad precedent, which is what the United States is worried about. So now, you know, what group might break away from a country, you know, have a large military or some type of terrifying capability and declare that they want to meet with the United States to negotiate peace, and well, they just made themselves a country.
Yeah.
And so that's the danger with legitimizing these types of, and that's been the United States' longstanding policy. President Obama didn't want to do it. President George W. Bush didn't want to do it because they did not want to legitimize the Kim dynasty. President Trump, on the other hand, has said, this policy hasn't worked for 65 years. Maybe it's time to meet with them and see if something can get done.
So do you think in the long run that will help more than it will hurt?
If President Kim of North Korea is serious in his intentions and isn't playing a grand game, then this is, you know, a remarkable time for global stability and peace. He could, on the other hand, just be playing the world community, the international community, like authoritarian leaders do so well. We've seen this. It's a habit, you know, from Castro to Putin and the leaders of the Soviet Union before the Russian Federation was in existence, to Iran. I mean, you know, did I say Saddam Hussein already? these types of individuals, to keep power at home when they feel an outside threat, often agree to some type of negotiation and then come back home and they just crack down on their population hard and break the agreement again. And it's just, it's buying time for them to build more military to get more relief from countries. And that's what North Korea has usually done, is they ask for a couple $1 billion from the U.S. in food or something so that they can pacify their domestic population, make sure no rebellion results from starvation, which is a huge issue in North Korea. And after, you know, a year or two of getting these, you know, this free food, free money from the United States, they break the agreement again when everything starts to stabilize, and you see the whole cycle perpetuate itself. And that's the way it's been for decades.
And it seems like it's been escalating these last couple of years or so, as they've escalated their testing of their nuclear weapons.
Yeah, exactly. And that gives us even more reason to go to the negotiation table, as, and you know, now they have the capability to launch missiles. We're not sure if they can miniaturize nukes and attach them to those missiles yet, but they have a nuclear bomb that they can drop. They have some missile technology. So that, can they combine the two? We don't really want to find that out. So the idea is like, hey, let's go over there, let's legitimize them, and in legitimizing their existence, take away that nuclear capability. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we're not sure if we can deter North Korea. A deterrence means that nobody's going to strike at us because they know we can retaliate even worse than their initial response. Mm-hmm. We're not sure if that deters Kim. He might want to launch a nuke at us and go down in flames himself, but be able to say, you know, for the history of the world, I fired a successful shot at the United States. Yeah. You know, that could be rational according to his cost-benefit calculations.
I guess, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Craig Albert, you got to stay with us. If for whatever reason you can't stay with us the entire time, remember, you can also go to speakingwith.com, click on Listen Online at your convenience. You'll be able to catch it that way as well. We'll be right back.